Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Long Story Short, the podcast about storytelling and connection, where we interview marketers and entrepreneurs to hear the stories they tell about their brands. I'm Jeff.
And I'm Sophia. This is a podcast by humans, for humans, who also happen to be marketers. On this week's show, our guest is Scott Vaughn.
Scott is a passionate marketing executive currently working as the Chief Growth Officer at Integrate. He previously served as the CMO at Integrate and brings passion and experience to develop and execute go-to-market strategies that drive relevance, relationship, and revenue. In his career, Scott has operated as an executive leader, board member, marketing practitioner, industry speaker, and prolific writer on all things marketing, technology, and business.
Although this is a marketing podcast, this week we talked about how it's not actually about the marketers, nor is it about sales. The buyer's process is the only one that matters. Scott delves into why this is the case and how to shape your strategy accordingly.
We had a great discussion with Scott. I loved his perspective on how it isn't marketing's job to serve sales, but to partner with them to scale and drive engagement with your brand. So without further ado, please enjoy our conversation with Scott Vaughn.
Welcome, Scott. Thank you so much for being on this week's episode of Long Story Short.
So glad to be here and looking forward to a conversation.
So we want to start by talking about your pathway to your current role, which we know has involved experience both in marketing and in sales. And we would love if you could tell us a little bit more about how your experience has played into where you are today.
It's been a little bit all over the place, and I think in a good way. I went to school when I was a classically trained marketer and a brand and product marketer right out of school, and went to work in the tech industry. Lucky and fortunate, because as we know, tech has shaped the last 20 plus years of all that's happening. And then about year four in marketing, I got promoted to director, and I started to go out on customer visits with the sales team. And I would kind of under my breath go, what the hell are they talking about? So I decided it was time, and I went into sales and then sales management for about an 8-10 year part of my career. Really enjoyed it. I learned a ton about customer, about a different way of storytelling and communications techniques and all those. But what really hit as I became an executive in sales, I really missed the strategy and the go-to-market strategy. So I worked my way back through the marketing channels, and I had some business leadership roles that were services in between and multi-roles and all that. But here we face, in the last 12 years, I've been really firmly in the CMO seat, and that's what I enjoy. You know, really understanding markets, understanding buyers, understanding the go-to-market, and putting all those pieces together. A couple of years ago at Integrate, I was the founding CMO of Integrate, and we've had a great ride, and we have an excellent CMO now. I moved over to this role of Chief Growth Officer, and it was, I don't think it's necessarily a trend, but it's something that worked for Integrate, and the team asked me to take on, and I've enjoyed it, which is look at the growth levers in the market and the business, and think about it operating between sales, marketing, customer success, and product, and put those pieces together. And the job can be a little bit fluid. Each year, your OKRs may change a little bit, your objectives, key results, and where you focus on those levers. But for me, that's really exciting. But if you strip down all the stuff, I'm a marketer. I love the go-to-market stuff. That's what drives me.
That's great. And we certainly have seen, you know, just some of our research, we have seen the Chief Growth Officer title gaining some momentum. And I think, frankly, as exactly as you sort of explained, is the fact that you have these big moving parts that are now sort of their own well-oiled machines, but who's kind of keeping them all connected, right?
Yeah, I think that's a piece of it. There's definitely a connector role. There's a strategy role. There is at times you have to pick up a shovel, right? And get your thought leadership articles and blogs out the door. Know how to do that with marketing. There's times you really need to go see your top 10 customers on a strategic orchestrated set of sessions, right, that are required. We are big on our partner ecosystem because a lot of technologies and data providers connect in to our platform and solutions. So that's a part of the initiative of growth. So it varies a lot. And I think the lesson here is especially on career-wise for sales and marketing, listen for opportunity, because that's what I did. And I said, well, that'd be interesting. I think I have the base skills to do that. Much like if we take the MarTech world and marketing automation or CRM, no one knew how to use these platforms, but someone who came in said, I'll try that. And now it's a career and it's marketing ops or revenue ops. And those opportunities exist everywhere.
Yep. Yeah. And in my experience, it was analytics in much the same way, right? So we have all this data. What are we going to do with it, right? Yeah. And so early in my career, it was, I think I know what we can do with this. I think I know how we can, you know, sort of improve our business as a result.
That's a perfect example, though, that was something that was a need or a discipline, and it turned into such an important strategic role and skill set at a company.
Exactly. And so what I wanted to go back to, you know, what is the brand story that you tell at Integrate?
Yeah, it's a brand story that really started with a core idea. And as you know, when you start a company, you have a core mission and idea that gets moved around by the market and use cases in reality. So the brand story is one of a promise that we're really working towards, which is there's a big shift in the market. And that shift in the market, if you think about it, I'm going to geek out a little bit on marketing technology.
Please.
But marketing automation about 12, 15 years ago came around. And think about the before and after that. The before was, hey, events, data sheets. You know, we were those people often, you know, hey, they pick the colors if you're being the negative side. Marketing automation came around 12, 15 years ago. And look now, wow, we could build our own database. We had funnels. We could generate leads and content and a website. I mean, it was a big step forward to some accountability. And that was a great ride. And then what we saw was, hey, but when you send the leads to sales, so we took that funnel and we tried to flip it and did this thing called account-based marketing about 6 years ago so that we could serve sales better and be more aligned. And again, progress and wonderful. Well, the story at Integrate is really one that is that next level. How do you not just be marketing driven or sales driven with these systems and your go-to-market, but how do you flip that to be buyer driven? Because we think that's the process that matters. And whether you organize those by accounts or by personas and buyers, we call that precision demand marketing. And we've been building out a set of solutions and technology to help B2B teams become more buyer driven. And that's been our journey. And we started it in single channels and then started connecting channels like events and social and digital and content syndication and, you know, into the systems. And so with a name like Integrate, we've been on this run and we've been growing the whole way at a nice clip. And it's a great story, but we think now we're into more of a disruptive next generation. And certainly Integrate's not the only company in that space. And that's what we're even more excited about. So we're on a quest here.
Well, the thing I want to sort of commend you on, because this is very much the way we work as well, is it's working backwards, right? It's starting putting the customer first. And so I think that's really, and the way you talk about your role, the way you talk about the way Integrate approaches things, I think fundamentally that's just the way it always needs to be. That if you think of anything inside out in terms of, and so back to your point around the buyer's process is the only one that matters. If you think of things based on we've all created however many funnels, right? So it's just about marketing automation and putting more people into the funnel. But is anybody doing the reverse? And are we actually building products that the market actually wants? Are we actually creating content that is actually going to be valuable for people in those roles? Right. Are we actually aligning it to where they are? Are we understanding their needs and pain points? And, you know, frankly, this is why we're in business, but like, we love to hear companies that are sort of taking a similar approach. And how do we build processes and technology that help companies work backwards and start with what the customer needs?
Yeah, boy. And Jeff, as you know, it's journey, easy to say, hard to do, especially as you get into larger and larger companies. But I think the shift is there enough now. And what's exciting is, you know, especially on the marketing technology side, it's been kind of boring. It's not been a lot of innovation these last few years. A lot of the marketing automation players who ruled the market got sucked up into the bigger companies. And wonderfully, they're now part of bigger platforms and delivering value, but at a different level where the innovation is slowed. And what we see driven by, you know, everybody working from home, think about B2B buyers. They're buying remote. you know, they're still part of a buying committee. They used to be in a conference room and sketching on whiteboards and talking about business cases, or they go to an event and you could go to a demo, a case study session, and meet the team. You just knocked out a big part of your buying process. Well, now it's one little digital touch at a time. How many Zoom calls can you be on? That's flipped what marketing has to focus on. Marketing has to go deeper into that process. Marketing has to play a different role. Buyers' expectations are going to go up because of these digital touch points. And then think about what sales is going through. You know, it used to be that, hey, I make a phone call. I'm going to be in North Carolina next Thursday. Do you have some time to meet? Now it's, do you have time for another Zoom call for me to show me your solution? So it's really redefined, starting with the buyer and how accounts make decisions to try to help their business. And that's a direct reflection on how marketing and sales will work. And it goes downhill to what technology, data models, how your team's organized. We're going to see a big ripple effect in this next era. And that's why we focused at Integrate on precision demand marketing. We're trying to build solutions that solve for those challenges and how to scale to get there.
Well, and the thing I want to touch on that I love that you put, I believe it was a blog on your website. And so while we've seen the buyer's journey kind of continue to evolve over time, and especially to move more digital, but obviously the current times we're living in, we've seen a major acceleration of some of those changes. And so I think it's really fascinating, but I love the fact that you were saying essentially that while the buyer's process has changed pretty substantially, we're still selling like it's 2015.
Yeah. And we all know the formula. Look, I learned the formula. I could probably recite it in my sleep. Generate lead, right? Send the email nurture, 3-step cadence, score, push to BDR. BDR doesn't get a response, pushes it back into nurture, rinse and repeat. Now that was cool in you know, 5, 6, 7 years ago when you were breakthrough and the buyer was delighted and surprised. Wow, they really know, they understand that I'm interested in this topic. Well, now every B2B brand and marketing and sales team has the same formula, or worse, I would argue, because that formula ran out of gas. What did sales do? Marketing's not getting me what I need. Yep. I'm going to go build my own stack. And so unintentionally, we have a little bit of a sales and marketing tech stack war. Who can build the bigger wall? And that's what I meant by, well, things like account-based marketing, which we love, but to think that that's going to solve an alignment problem on its own, we don't think is the only answer. We think it's a core part and a great strategy, but only when it's in the context of being buyer-driven.
Right.
And that's what I see is the change over the next 2 to 3 years. And then things like artificial intelligence and machine learning, and then these kind of things can help you pay off, because the first test that has to happen is the mindset change, not tech or process. Those are enablers of the strategy. I think we're getting there. The conversations that I'm fortunate to have in my role, because I'm a marketer who sells and markets to marketers. My colleague, Deb Wolf, who's our CMO, we always talk about this. We get to have these rich, deep conversations. And in some days, it's holding up a mirror to our own personas. But it's great because you get their view, and it really helps tremendously to know that audience.
Going back to what you were saying about the evolution of technology and how it's grown throughout the past few years, as impressive as it is, Jeff and I also talk a lot about how it can lead to people thinking that, oh, if I have the right technology, then like, check, my problems are good. Like, I just put it in, it spits out what I need, and like, we're good to go. But that's not always how it works. And so what I'm interested in hearing your take on is, like, how do you think technology can empower business, and how can we use it to answer the right questions and actually help and move us forward?
Yeah, if you ever have one of those buttons you push where you buy technology and the problem solved, I want it. I think the reality is that technology is can be incredibly powerful. But a couple of things you'll learn along the way, and I learned it, you know, my first big implementation as CMO of 2009 with Eloqua. You can't shove technology in without the talent, number one, so that people that understand the value of the technology and how to make it work within your business, et cetera. And the second thing on the technology piece, change management is probably bigger than the technology itself. It's not the complication from the technology, but it usually changes your process. It changes, Jeff, what you measure, your analytics mm-hmm. world. It changes so many things, and some can be more disruptive than others. Some are a simple tool that make things better and you plug it in and you need a few people and, you know, procurement and you're good to go. Others can be more disruptive, but if you get those right, they're bigger payoff. So there's no question in marketing and sales, we have been overserved, to use a pub term, on technology. But a lot of that is reflect. I spoke a little bit earlier on what was happening. The innovation slowed. So we were going to get it from this promise of a master platform. That didn't happen. And the field marketing team screaming, I need this. The event team screaming, I need that. The SDRs, I need this. And before long, you've accumulated a lot of tech that maybe is not integrated. And that's the opposite of buyer driven, right? Now you can't orchestrate across channels. You can't see the data. So I think this little bit of a, I'll call it a lull period in innovation, we do see starting to see some streamlining of some of the tech stacks so that that tech stack can be an enabler of new things, of disruption and change, or even just to manage the business. So I think we're on a little bit of a swing to where that's leveling out. We all have plenty of technology, but you need the people, you need the culture and the change management mindset, and it has to align to your go-to-market strategy.
Yeah, and we've seen from our research the rise in, you know, what we refer to as marketing orchestration, and completely agree. I think we've over point solutioned ourselves to the point where now, how do they actually work together? How can you, if all of your data lives in all these different places, then it's not actually doing you any good. And I think to your point, to me, I think the thing that not enough attention is paid to, ironically, is the people. I think fundamentally, and I really love the way you say that the technology enables the strategy and not the other way around. And I think that's so important, because fundamentally, and we see this a lot as well, where companies will bring in the technology and think that their problem solved without realizing that actually you've added to the burden on your people. You've added to the additional sort of management that needs to happen for you to actually execute smoothly.
Well, orchestration, I think, is a powerful word. We brought it at Integrate to the marketing tech discussion in 2016, us and other companies, a handful. And the idea was, you can't just automate, right? To my examples earlier, you need some sort of orchestration, and it's internal orchestration and external orchestration. You've got to be able to target correctly and activate and set up campaigns. You've got to be able to have it connect to other systems so that it drives more value to your world. You have to be able to measure it. Your data has to be governed. There's so many pieces that need to be orchestrated internally so that externally you can be buyer driven. And that's the key. And I think that's more and more what we're seeing now is this, the next level of goal. In order to be buyer driven and account focused, you can be both. You don't just have to put all your chips in on AB, fill in the blank, marketing or sales or whatever. You really have to be able to connect those key pieces. And that's what's so important about this next phase. And easy to say, harder to do.
Always.
Especially when you have legacy or you have tech debt or you've been overserved, that can be a little bit harder. But those tough decisions and then picking, you know, technology or adding technology into your equation will help you, can help you do that. But it's a means to an end. It's not the strategy.
That's a great way to put it. And one thing that's sort of similar to me that I think is something that we're seeing the growth of, but I love your thoughts on it. So very often in marketing departments, you have demand gen, which is seen as sort of the quantifiable output of marketing. And brand is sort of the squishier, you know, stuff over on the side here. And but I love your perspective, and I'd love your thoughts on, you know, brand actually being the thing that drives the demand.
Well, you've got all my religion. I had to learn the hard way. Believe me, I ran lead businesses. I've done the lead thing in the early days of marketing automation. I was a brand person before. I don't think you can drive demand without a strong brand. And for me, a strong brand is not just your logo and your colors and your consistency, but brand is what you stand for and your voice and how you present in all formats and functions, certainly not just through marketing. And one of the most powerful ways I've seen that work is I call point of view marketing, having a very clear point of view and listening always for what's happening in the market, what's your take on that market, and then people turn to you, to your brand, to your voices on what's your take on this shift, this issue, and being authentic about that. That provides an ability. When you have that, then think about how much better when you do your campaigns and you put out a solution that people are going to be open. So it's not, brand doesn't equal necessarily just awareness. It equals relevancy. And to me, in order to really drive demand, you need that, be able to put those pieces together. And so what you also identified was the silo problem. If you have a brand team over here and a demand team over there, you've got a problem, right? You need to collapse those into more of a unified go-to-market. And you still may need that specialty in the individuals that have knowledge of how to do that. But if they're not put in motion together, then you're going to have real problems. It's much easier to create demand when you can articulate your value propositions, your why, et cetera. And I know I'm going off on marketing rants here, but that to me is the difference in how you approach things.
Marketing rants is the whole point of this podcast. So please do not apologize.
It could be an alternate title.
I've got lots of them if you want to. And it's through learnings, in all honesty, that one unique thing about not only being a CMO in different markets and all that, but this last 7 years, when you're a CMO for a marketing company, your customers are marketers. So this is not just a daily or a weekly conversation. This is an hourly conversation of comparing notes with your customers. So there's a bit of a burden to it, but it's also an advantage that you get a good understanding to see what works. We're integrated. We're not Microsoft or Salesforce or Red Hat, but we're in looking at how they think and what they do and trying to bring those practices. And one thing I also learned, integrate is customer number one for our solutions. So they're always the first customer, and you can learn a lot from that in real world use cases and testing and all kinds of things. So that helps too.
Yeah. One marketing rant that I always go off on, so buckle up, get ready. But right. I want to get your thoughts is I'm very interested in how our words interact with our marketing, and specifically a term that gets thrown around probably every hour of your meetings as well is thought leadership, right? What you sort of described in your previous answer. But it fascinates me because we talk about it all the time, but we never say thought leadership. And what I mean by that is, or we implicitly are discussing around it, but never, I feel like there's such a disconnect there, and we talk about it and don't always, we're not always meaning the same thing when we say it, right? And so I'm really interested for your perspective, how you define it, and then also how does that definition influence how you go about cultivating it, right? That was one of the first things you brought up. We all know how to do thought leadership content, but like, A, do we? And B, is it, what is your definition of that? I'm very interested.
Yeah, and this is a topic I'm passionate about because stint in my career, I was publisher of Information Week during its heyday. Remember when the CIO and IT were putting in all this infrastructure in the late 90s, early 2000s, and .com? It was craziness. But I was a publisher. Have you ever tried to compete in an editorial room? I'm not an editor. I'm certainly a hack writer, but man, that's competitive. And they have to get the story right, fast, and tight. And what I learned about the best brands in that is they're consistent. They're building that story over time. And so I learned a lot from that experience of how to have a take, how to have a point of view that supports your brand, that supports your go-to-market, and to have rocks. What are the big things that we believe in that we are going to communicate about? Yes, right, but video, your webinars, your go-to-market voice and decks for sales of the why behind it. That to me is thought leadership is a layer that is built into your culture, but it's also a layer of approach. It's not just content. It's what you believe. And then by putting it into action, you have a voice in the market and you have to earn that every day. It's not a given. But if you earn that through provocative, interesting, relevant, compelling, and I'll call content in a very big bucket, then I think that helps your brand. That helps create, I want to have a conversation with these people. That's demand, right? That's marketing's ultimate job. Marketing's job is not to serve sales. Sales is your partner. Marketing's job is to help make the buying process and the engagement with your brand in whatever service, selling, all the life cycle, less frictionless, easier, better experience. That's marketing's job. And to do that, you need to do positioning. You need to do thought leadership. You need to be clear on the value of your propositions. You need to be able to, you know, make it easy to do business with. There's a lot of things that happen, but that's how I view it in terms of thought leadership and its impact across the whole way.
Yeah, we love that. And we especially love that you said that you have to earn that every day. And I think that's the piece that we feel is really important. And obviously, we spend a lot of our time exactly that, working backwards to better understand what those pain points are. And the other thing for both thought leadership and how it impacts your brand that is sort of unspoken, but I want to make sure to make explicitly clear, is understanding your customers' problems and showing them that you understand their world and that you can help solve their problems. And I think that, to me, is the biggest piece of thought leadership and why it will help drive demand, is that if I understand that you, Integrate as a company, understands my world and can solve my problems today and can proactively understand what they are, then, and to your point, frankly, and I'm sure a lot of this actually comes from using your own solutions too, right? Being customer one, but then I trust that you'll be able to solve the future problems that I don't know I have yet, right? Yeah. And that's where, to me, thought leadership builds the brand.
The table. Yeah, that you're passionate, you care, and you're running stuff by people and you're involving them in the process versus, hey, here's something new, buy it. Here's the sketch. Here's what we're thinking about. Here's what we see happening. And here's where we're going. I think that's really important.
Yeah. So I want to switch gears a little bit to my favorite topic, which is always data. And so over the years, we've seen marketing attribution grow in importance. But as we've seen in many organizations, it turns for a way for marketing to essentially claim credit for their role. And so if focusing attribution for every dollar that they spend is potentially a dead end, as I think you and I agree with. Yeah, exactly.
You guys are just trying to push them, aren't you?
That's right. Well, so then in your world, like, how do you think the data should be used sort of most effectively?
I wrote an article about this 4 years ago, and every year I bring it back up and give a different take on it. Look, Here's, I love attribution.
Yep.
Give me accountability all day, measure, analytics, most importantly, insights so that I can act on them. But here's one of the unintentional consequences when you go in on attribution. It becomes a game of credit. And it changes the behavior of how, not only in marketing or sales, but it changes behavior. I'm going to just capture it so I can get credit, so I can defend what I'm spending, and not necessarily, that's important. Don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. Very important you show ROI, accountable. But when attribution has that unintentional issue lurking around, you don't really improve your overall impact on the business. And that's the goal.
Right.
And so I think attribution is wonderful, but attribution for credit is a big, big problem. Hey, did marketing generate it? Did sales? Did the partner team? Oh, we'll divide it 33 and third because I'm going to make a bonus on X, Y, and Z. Believe me, please know, and I'm not disparaging getting your bonus and hitting your goals. I do that too. But in the bigger picture of things, you need to be able to do attribution for understanding and insight and improvement and impact, not for credit.
Yeah,
and I think that's where we've gone awry.
I think you're right. And I think it's the mindset shift, right? It's understanding that we're doing this internally, not so that we can, not specifically so that we can dole out bonuses or credit or anything like that, but so we can better understand what's working in our business. And I think that's the part that gets lost. There's a great notion called Goodhart's Law, which I always love, which is that as soon as a measure becomes a target, it ceases to become a good measure. Right. Because I think to your point, what happens is as soon as all eyes are on a particular thing, you end up changing your processes and structure to optimize for that one thing,
wow.
which sort of gives you, which gets you away from the ultimate goal. Right. Like, and I think those are the things that when you put bonuses or whatever it may be, you incentivize the behaviors that maybe aren't the right ones. You find easier ways to game them and you're not actually getting to sort of the big prize.
Yeah. Boy, that was way more articulate than what I said. And I don't know how you balance those things because we need to set targets. We need to be accountable. We need to measure. So I think coming up with that right balance of outcome-based, end game-based, and work, as you said, working back, and that's the only way my brain can work. I look out to see what's happening. I constantly look up and I learned from someone I worked from, and I completely have adopted this approach. Some days you got to be at the telescope, some days you're at the windshield, and some days you're at the microscope. And I think key to leadership is knowing when to do which one and how to mix those. And I think the same is true for analytics and attribution and measurement and all of it. And also following the market and what's happening.
I love that concept. Yeah, I love the concept of the different approach. And so to me, I think attribution, it really does come back to me to the conversation about brand driving demand. Because so one thing I've seen being done somewhat effectively is if you're able to do it is I think we all have an understanding that some of the squishier brand things, they do have a value. The problem is they're not as explicitly clear. And so that's where if you lean on something as just sort of black and white as attribution, you're going to end up under attributing for some of those things, the brand, which to me is sort of the rising tide that lifts all boats. But so some of those more creative swings. And so some organizations we've seen, what they've done effectively is to say, you know what, we're going to take 25% of our budget. We're going to spend it on some of these brand activities. And to be honest, we know we're not going to be able to measure it, or we're not even going to try, right? Like, we know there's value there. We can't totally quantify it. And we know we need to be putting money towards it. And we know if we lean too hard on attribution, it's going to get us just to the nuts and bolts. And we're right back in the sort of the marketing automation 2015 framework again, right?
That's exactly right. And you know, that happens in all functions. Think about, I'll go back to the heyday of IT as publisher of Information Week. They would do the 20% budget on innovation. They needed to support the business. But in order, think how fast innovation was happening in digital and e-commerce at that stage, how transformational it was for business. So the smart leaders within and across the business and IT were saying, we're going to put 20% across aside. And this isn't, brand isn't some experiment, but I think that coming to an agreement on measuring what matters is important. And that is a discussion that needs to happen with your executive team and your colleagues and come to that agreement. And hopefully you have that in culture and environment that you can do that, because some things that are known in marketing, because marketing is should be at the tip of the spear, at least 6, more likely 12 months to 24 months out ahead. And that's the reality, especially if you're selling anything that has a 3, 6, 9, 12 months buying process, then that's what you have to do.
Well, you're speaking to our heart by saying that you have to have the conversations about what to measure first. I mean, that's again, fundamentally, and to your point, frankly, one of the reasons I was so excited to talk to you and being a chief growth officer is seeing that organizations are putting more intentionality around even just the structure internally to help do that. Because when you just have, let's say you're just sort of governed by, you know, sales, right? Like, and then that's where you end up in that situation where marketing will see sales as their customer when it should be a partner. And frankly, there should be an organizational agreement between CEO, CFO, you know, CRO, CMO, everybody get on the same page for how are we going to measure what we're doing? How can we all be on the same page that it's about what the buyer needs? What about what we're not about what we're trying to do? But to me, it always starts with making sure you have the right measurement strategy that's going to incentivize the right behaviors.
Yeah. Boy, that's well said. And I think we all have to learn that. We know that intellectually or academically, but when you get into it and, you know, the game's on the line, the business has to drive and you need to hit a deadline, we can lose that. And I certainly, that happens to me. And that's the fun of being in business, right? That you can actually practice all this real time. And I just feel fortunate that have been part of a lot of cool, either disruptive or growing brands where you have some room to run. Because I've been in the opposite situation, and frankly, it's not as fun or challenging or as exciting. Well, it's as challenging, but for different reasons.
Yeah. And one of the other things I just want to touch on that you brought up was the Insight Beat reports. And again, that could not be more, if I could, you know, tattoo something on my body, that might be the first one.
You're not going to ask me that question, are you?
No. But at the same time, it's like, but I think that's so perfect. So I think so many companies confuse having data and reports with having insight, with knowing what to do with their business. And I think those two things are different. And what I see all the time, you know, we'll work with companies, and one of the first things they do is they want to show off, and they say, look in Tableau, we have 500 different reports, or look at these, you know, like these 30 page, you know, monthly PowerPoint decks that we're sending to our executives. And to me, the first thing I have to say, look, this thing that you think is a strength of yours is actually a weakness. To me, what you're saying, unfortunately, is that you don't know what's important. And so it's what should matter. And the way I used to say it sort of as a head of analytics was, you know, my term was always, I can't go into a CEO's office and tell them about an R squared of a model I built. That's not going to work.
Right.
So you have to talk about, what does it actually matter? You have to basically be able to translate from data back into business. Like, they're two different languages.
Yeah.
And so you need to translate across them and then translate it back to then say, hey, you know what, when we do X and then Y, and then we invite somebody to the event, that's when we actually see these things happen that we want to see. Okay, great. Now you're speaking my language. But it's the insights that actually drive business. It's not just a matter of having, you can have all the data in the world, you can have all the reports in the world, all the BI tools in the world, nothing is going to make up for not having insight.
Yeah. And you really picked up on another key thing we learn as professional communicators, really know and understand your audience and what matters to them. To your point about being able to, how do I get the data into the right hands so that they can draw, or we can help them draw insights for the business as a whole, but also for their functions and their requirements. I mean, that's an art. I know it's a science, but boy, is that an art. And that comes down to, you know, what I think the essence of marketing is. And it's old school, but marketing's the truth well told. And that compass for me is important. There's storytelling and there's packaging, but at the end of the day, if you can really authentically pick up on the drivers and the movements of markets and your brand and your customers and really get that nailed, that's nirvana. That's when you really feel you can hit the slipstream.
That's great. And so, as an experienced marketer, we always love to ask, and I know, you know, sort of this entire episode's been a whole lot of it, but you know, we call it marketing gold. So, you know, is there beyond sort of some of the big fundamental things that we've sort of spent our time talking about, is there a piece or a tactic or something that you've used successfully that, you know, maybe it's a little off the beaten path, maybe it's not. Is there something that you've used that you think other marketers should be considering?
Well, I think I shared a few of them. Hopefully I put some gold in this.
Oh, quite a bit.
Excuse me. But when I think about it, I think a lot about that ability to nail your brand point of view. I think that compass of differentiation and relevancy and positioning and storytelling stems from that. And it creates and generates conversations and interest, which is demand. And I think it's underutilized. It gets thrown into the bucket. You said it perfectly, thought leadership, or gets thrown in the bucket of PR or, you know, articles or media, whatever it is. And it's not capitalized on as much. And if you really want to be a market leader, a category leader, you have to lead authentically and you have to lead with a strong point of view. And I think that's underutilized in so many companies and brands, and it gets lost. It's not a departmental function. It is, I think, a lightning rod.
So another concept, I know I'm going to bore you asking all your different definitions, but I find it interesting. So hopefully someone else listening does. But another thing I really like to hear, because I think everyone defines it differently, is how do you define success, either personally or professionally? What does that mean to you?
Boy, it's a good question. Very philosophical. I like to say it, when you get older and you get more experience under your belt, that definition 100% changes. When you have to define that for yourself, and the more mature, and I wish I would have done this earlier, maybe taken that more serious, and I applaud that question. So today for me, it's, I don't need work-life balance. I like work-life integration because I enjoy my job. And when I can integrate it, I can step out and go for a run during the middle of the day, or go to a family event or whatever, and I can mix it in. I feel satisfied and happy. I don't like the rigidity of you work now and then you're done and then it doesn't work for me. So success is when I feel like I can do all aspects of what makes me happy and support my family and et cetera. So that's one thing. I think also that COVID is, I think both mental and physical wellness has entered another stage. And again, I think it's for everybody today, but I think as you learn more how important that is for exercise and to stretch your brain and your mind. And I wish I would have done that earlier, because I could go all in, and I was all in. And sometimes only as you get older, you realize if I would have saved some of the calories and not burn that energy, I could probably put it at these two things instead of these 19 things. And you learn those things along the way. So success for me is, that's a big part of it. The second part of it is my honest happiness and joy is watching other people's grow and succeed. I love to see mentoring. I love to see people break through. It gives me the most joy in around. And third, it's, don't be confused. Winning and succeeding, especially as a team, that euphoric feeling, and maybe it comes from early sports days or wherever it is, but it's still a great feeling. So I kind of bucket it in those three things, the way I look at success today. But it's a really good question, and I think a timely one.
Thank you for sharing that. That was really powerful. Honestly, if I ever get asked the question, I'm going to try to paraphrase as best you say. Honestly, you took all of the words right out of my mouth. Thank you very much for sharing that.
Yeah, got it. I think we're doing a lot of reflecting, safe to say. And when this is our communications, boy, I'd love to be sitting down and doing this and having lunch or coffee or cocktails and having a conversation like that. But that's not our reality. And hopefully in the next 6-12 months, it will be. And I think we've all hopefully learned a lot and appreciative of some things we maybe took for granted.
Let's hope so. And so what resources, books, blogs, podcasts, anything else that you have that you would want to recommend to our audience?
Boy, there's so many, so I'm going to be thoughtful. The one that I really gravitate to, and it's Anne Hanley's Everybody Writes. It is, to me, the single best, boil down all the stuff to, if you want to be in marketing, you have to be a good business communicator. And generally following Anne, I'm a fan, because that's what I would strive to do, and I have to work at it every day. And so that's a book that I, and someone that I admire and follow. Then on the, I'll call it the opposite extreme, and I don't know if it's opposite extreme, but another thing that always inspires me, I can't always take the manifesto point by point, but Christopher Lockhead and Play Bigger and Category Creation, I think is something not so much about the category creation, but how you think about differentiation, how you think about positioning and storytelling, how you have to play big at the right moments. Those are, to me, kind of two different perspectives. One is on strategy and big, and the other is just really being great at what you do and communicating the value of your company, of your brand, of your solution set. So a couple of nuggets, hopefully, that help. I'll be honest, I'm a pretty prolific reader, but I read very few business books at this point in my career, because in writing and storytelling, I'm looking for inspiration. If reading a book about Ethiopia or another place, it only because it keeps my mind open and not so narrow, to your point about what is success, it's having a little bit more of that worldview and not being so, you know, one-dimensional, so to speak.
Well, you may not realize this, but you've gotten us to be converts to the Total Anarchy email list. I saw you posted something about it on LinkedIn probably about a month or two ago. I saw that, I checked it out, and I sent it to Sophia. So we've been really enjoying Ann's emails. So
Ann Hanley's a wonderful communicator, yeah. And you know, I know her not deeply, but I know just her, she's who she is too authentically. It's what you see, and I think that's really positive, and you strive to be that. And she has a brand, like a company has a brand, and it's a great example of that. But more often than not, it just, man, I learned some good stuff to put to work.
Yeah. And last thing before we let you go, where can people find you on social media?
I'm big on LinkedIn, and I really enjoy you give what you get. So I like to share and hear and listen. A lot of times before I'll do something like this or a topic, I'll go out and ask the LinkedIn community what they think and what their take on it is. It's a wonderful place, I think, and built some great relationships. I have pulled back on other social media just because of the noise and the mm-hmm. and the time, and that's just a personal thing. I still have, you know, I'll use Facebook for friends or, you know, for a birthday wish or something small, and certainly make sure to keep an eye on Twitter for the brand and the conversations, but not a regular poster. And then Instagram, of course, just to see what family and friends are up to. But LinkedIn's become really my voice for the business side of it. And so you can find me there, and very happy to connect or share and compare notes at any time. I think that's how we all learn.
Absolutely. And that'll be linked in the show notes as well. Well, Scott, thank you so much for coming on. This has been amazing. And thank you so much for sharing your story with us.
Yeah, well, I really appreciate your style and approach. And I really literally felt like I either went through therapy or had a conversation. I'm not sure which.
Well, that was a great conversation with Scott. I really love the focus on the buyer's process and working backwards from their needs to develop growth strategies. And now it's time for Footnotes with Sophia.
Footnotes is where we expand on portions of the discussion that we wanted to learn more about and share with you. So one thing that I really enjoyed from our discussion this week is how crucial it is to define elements that you frequently use to ensure that everyone is on the same page with your usage and that you're not also falling into the trap of just using empty buzzwords. So another topic that we talked through is orchestration. And Jeff, I know we have an internal definition and conceptualization of that fueled by some research that we have done. So I wanted to use this footnote section to delve into that.
Yeah, certainly. And so the background here, from my perspective, is that marketing has become really split into silos of these specialized teams, according to some research, as many as potentially 20 unique specialized functions. And as that's happened, MarTech has created tools to solve each of those individual needs. But as a result, we now have everything has kind of gotten split into all these different places, and it now becomes much harder to kind of work across. And so technology, in a lot of cases from our research, showed that only 26% of marketers feel that MarTech is a strategic enabler in their organization. And so in reality, as the technology has been harder to get your arms around, orchestration really fundamentally is the business process to align with that technology. And so the way we really think about it is it's five legs of this stool, all of which really need to be met in order to function appropriately. And so there's integrations, content, data, teams, and channels. And from our research, only 8%, not surprisingly, only 8% of companies have achieved what we would say is full orchestration today. And the biggest impediments that we were seeing time and time again are going to be around data reporting, agility, and integrations, which again, I think speaks to the fact of how everything has gotten spread across the organization. And now it's just become harder to see everything across. And it's become a whole lot more difficult to execute when you have all of these different steps and a whole lot of different stakeholders and cooks in the kitchen. So that from my perspective is our conceptualization of marketing orchestration.
Well, thank you so much for sharing that. And I guess one thing that we want to make sure we're never just sharing information and then leaving it at that. So given this definition and a more unique data-driven conceptualization of orchestration, what can our listeners do with that information and definition?
Yeah, I think the first thing about any potential problem to solve is awareness, right? So just being aware of what are all the touch points, where are the bottlenecks, right? I think that's one of the things that we try to help our clients do is identify where are the pain points, where might not there be enough resource allocation being spent, or are there particular areas? Another thing that's really interesting, and again, this came from our research as well, is the fact that because of all these different specialized teams, you have different conceptualizations of what success means to different people across marketing. And so I think one of the first things you can do is make sure in order to align everybody around the same KPIs and making sure that it's important operationally that we be able to meet XYZ, but we all need to be rowing in the same direction. And that's, again, you know, we talked in the episode about marketing and sales and how they need to be rowing in the same direction. But now it goes beyond that. And it's really within all of the different sub functions within marketing. So I think awareness of it, getting on the same page in terms of strategy, in terms of priority, and then really being objective in terms of where are the bottlenecks in our process? Why are we not able, you know, if it's taking us 12 weeks to get a campaign out the door, start to finish, how do we sort of track all of those things? How might there be a better way to implement technology or take on tools that will allow us to be able to do that more scalably? So thank you, Sophia. And as always, all of the research and references can be found in the show notes. If you want to reach out to us about this story or inquire about sharing your own story, you can reach us at lsspodcast@circanresearch.com. Thank you for listening, and we hope you'll join us for a new story next week on Long Story Short. I want to thank Circan Research for being the sponsor of our show. Circan Research fuels demand for B2B marketers looking to gain a competitive advantage. We leverage original research and data-driven content to supercharge your growth. You can find out more on our website at circanresearch.com.